Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine. This is Get the Funk Out. If you are a first-time listener to Get the Funk Out, you can head over to the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. It'll tell you more about the show. But basically, I started this in 2011, and it came out of loss, but it turned into something beautiful. And it was so interesting because I had lost a friend of mine end of 2010, and there were a lot of publicists and other people pitching me books, and I felt like it was a gift every day to check the mail, because something would be perfect timing about creativity and resilience and et cetera, et cetera, or a film would come my way and it would be so uplifting or inspiring for me to create, because I believe very strongly in creativity, especially through grief or whatever it is you're going through, and it just can change your perspective and boost your optimism. So with that, I want to tell you a little bit about my first guest. She is an NPR editor's pick. Genevieve Wheeler Brown's new book, Beyond Blue and White, is out now. It's art history meets real life mystery. And after rediscovering the most iconic dishes in a townhouse, Genevieve unravels their fascinating stories. Again, on the show blog, there is an image of the book cover and more information about Genevieve, and she's standing by to join us now. Good morning, Genevieve.
Good morning, Janine. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for taking the time. I know you're on a book tour.
Oh, my gosh. It is such a pleasure to be with you.
I love it. And the book is so interesting. How did you decide to write this story?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, it's quite an adventure. And so I'm a decorative art advisor and a writer. So I've been in the art world for about 30 years. And, you know, with everything from the auction house Christie's in New York and London, all the way up to the spending time on the Antiques Roadshow. And so I was asked to see a collection of Dutch Delftware in New York. I was called up by the chair of a collections committee for a women's organization that was started in the Gilded Age. And I thought I would be seeing, you know, a couple of those beautiful, you know, blue and white plates, maybe a couple of vases. But what it turned out to be was a rare hidden cache of over 75 pieces of 17th and 18th century Dutch Delftware that, that truly took my breath away. And it opened a door, actually, to stories of women from the 17th all the way to the 20th century. So something I never expected.
And it is really beautiful to study this.
It's gorgeous. You know, it's an art form. I mean, the decorative arts are, they're objects, you know, they're art with, you know, made for a function. Mm-hmm. But they're also history that you can hold in your hand. So it's, yeah, they're endlessly, you know, teaching us.
I love that. I wanted to just share a quick something with you. So when my grandmother passed away, I received a lot of her china and plates. And I remember from my childhood being about five and seeing these big plates, whether they were, she was making a roast beef or something. And I felt like they captured a time in her childhood, and then I was so fortunate to receive them. And it just makes you stop and pause in your life and kind of pay more attention.
I mean, exactly. And because I'm getting a lot of feedback with people saying just the same thing, you know, that they had connected, they had always, people would let me know how much they've always loved blue and white and Delftware. And they're seeing these pieces in a new light. And as you said, like the pieces, maybe a plate, a bowl, something that was, you know, from your grandmother. But mm-hmm. They open the door because now we know, I mean, they're connections to our past, right? And as you said, they're vessels for memory.
Yes.
So it's, yeah, we're deeply, you know, tied to them and drawn to them.
Is there a specific moment in your writing journey where you felt very changed as a writer?
I think it was looking back, as I feel like, you know, as, I mean, I'm a female art advisor, and, you know, there's a surprisingly limited inclusion of women in art history overall. And once I sort of cracked open a greater story behind this collection, I realized that I really wasn't alone. And we're going back, you know, to the 17th century. I mean, these are, you know, these ceramics, you know, they're closely tied to, you know, ambition and perseverance and just, you know, grit. And so I felt, it made me feel good, you know, that there were, and we're in good company. You know, mm-hmm. women have, you know, we've survived, you know, and we've persevered over centuries. So it just made me feel, you know, that like I was a part of something much greater.
Yes. You make me think of being an archaeologist. You know, you're uncovering this history and sharing so many facts and the things. I don't typically see a book like this.
And it's funny that you say archaeologist, because I've been connecting with archaeologists often regarding this, because you know, it's the fragments, right?
That, yes.
You know, and I also see it as a it's, you know, we have these constellations of fragments, and when we can connect them all, right, and reform the pieces, that we get a greater understanding of an art form, but then even our own lives, you know, as women, you know, what have women done before us, you know, in, you know, we all have our unique confines, I think these women prove that, you know, we all have our confines, whether we're a 17th century woman or a 21st century woman.
Yes.
And, you know, we can do it.
Were those some of the themes that really stood out to you as you were writing this?
Absolutely. I think what rises to the top is, sheer ambition, perseverance, and curiosity and creativity. I mean, and those are, you know, just, I think these are all parts. I mean, these are all also attributes of that I think that we all aspire to live.
Yes.
And these pieces are kind of a testament to that legacy. I mean, they're gorgeous. I mean, they're beautiful, you know, they're beautiful forms. They're sculptural. Some of them are humorous. Some of them are just, you know, just drop dead magnetic. You know, when you walk into a room of blue and white ceramics, you know, your eyes, you know, you're drawn to it. So,
that's beautiful.
It was a great way to connect with them.
Okay, so you're on your book tour.
Yes.
And you said you're in North Carolina?
I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina now.
Okay.
Yes. I'm heading to London. I'm heading to Nashville and then I'm heading to London next. So.
Oh, you need an assistant?
Oh my gosh, come join me. Absolutely.
Oh, I love London. Okay, so here's my question, the reason I asked. On your book tour, are you bringing any items to share?
Gosh, you know,
wouldn't that be great?
I mean, these things are so delicate, but you know what's been wonderful is that when I've, you know, for example, just here in Charlotte, you know, meeting with curators, and then having the opportunity to see the pieces, or as I was in Charleston, you know, meeting with archaeologists, you know, going into their storage, seeing, you know, the remains of pieces that were excavated, you know, from the 18th century. And it's a rare opportunity. But then sometimes people who join me for their talks will bring their own pieces.
I love that. That's what I meant.
To the talk.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
To share. And then I really encourage it, because it's these pieces were meant to be shared.
It really brings the whole story to life when people can see it. So I love that you encourage that.
Yes. Yes.
I really do. So tell me about the title, Beyond Blue and White.
So that's a great question, and nobody's asked me that yet.
Actually. Really?
So no. And it's, you know, because I feel like the title is layered, you know, as the ceramic itself, because on the surface, you know, it refers to this familiar blue and white palette of Delphware that we see everything that, you know, everybody recognizes instantly. And then, you know, we often think we understand it. We see it everywhere. But the book invites you to look past that surface and to go beyond what seems to us maybe as purely decorative, because what emerges is a much larger story, not just ceramics, but global trade, cultural exchange, and then again, you know, most importantly, the women who shaped it and collected it and preserved it. So I kind of see the title as a promise that behind something that can be beautiful and familiar, can lie something deeper and a surprising history that may have just been hiding really in plain sight.
Mm-hmm. I feel also, Genevieve, that people will start to take a closer look at maybe their grandparents' treasured items and start asking questions about them. Where did you get this? Is this significant? Do you know anything about this? Things like that.
Exactly. Yeah, creating conversation. And you know what's interesting, too, is that I see in New York, because I live in New York, is that the next generation of collectors, just young people who are collecting, they're really looking for objects. I mean, there's clearly the interest in aesthetics, but also the young collectors now want to know the story. You know, where did this piece come from?
Yes.
You know, about the cultural references. They want to dig into the objects that surround them, that define them. So I hope that this book can, you know, bring those stories to life.
I was reminded of a story my aunt just shared with me, because she does have her mom's, my grandmother's collection of items, and she was talking about Vernon Kills and all these other things. And do you ever imagine there could be an exhibit in a museum, or maybe there is already, of some of these items?
So the collection that's featured in the book, although it was sort of behind closed doors for a long time, you can now visit it. So if you go, I'm happy to, you know, share the, you know, the contact information. But there are a few collections. The United States, we have, I mean, clearly Europe has the preeminent collection in Amsterdam, which, by the way, is on fire. I mean, what a great time to visit Amsterdam. But in the United States, we have some beautiful collections that were put together in the 19th century in Philadelphia, at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. The Museum of Fine Art in Boston has some lovely pieces. Primarily Delaware, you'll find a lot of it on the East Coast. But it would be fun to, you know, Delaware is inspired by Chinese ceramics. So we need to bring it to the West Coast.
Yes. That would be great. I could see this as an exhibit.
It would be fantastic. I mean, I think anything that opens the doors to stories, you know, it really is a way to connect with art.
Yes. And your family.
And your family.
To have those conversations.
To share that,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. You know, where did you get this plate? Oh, you got it from your grandmother. Tell me about that. Oh, you know, in my case, my grandmother had an inn. Her family had an inn in Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yes. So we had all these antique items, and I didn't even know, you know, the story until I started asking.
Oh, my gosh. You could write a story about that. Right. I think every collection is a story, really. And I think that, you know, collections are just such a reflection of, you know, who we are, how do we want to be perceived, you know, what it's, yeah, they're... It's, just the history of collecting itself. So it's a fascinating subject.
It is. It is. And in a time when a lot of people struggle with mental health and connecting with other humans, I feel like it's a great conversation starter and a way to ignite interest in yourself and connect you with other people.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, to that point, I mean, I talk about in the book that collecting was a way for women to come together in the 18th century, because in the 18th century it was acceptable for women in public to go out and to buy ceramic, porcelain, silverware. You know, you'd go in, shopping was a, you know, or attending auctions was appropriate for a woman. And then in the 19th century you had women, they called themselves China hunters in the 19th century. It was a way for women to go on adventures, you know, out into the countryside, collecting ceramics, going right into households. You imagine, you know, if you and I would hop on our carriage and head off, you know, to the villages in Connecticut, and we would knock on doors and try to buy ceramics from locals. But this was a way for women to define themselves and to, you know, to create community, you know, before they could vote, before they could, you know, were, you know, could have careers. So ceramics were a part of that. a part of women's independence.
It's really a fascinating read. I want to thank you for sharing that, by the way. Were you always intrigued by things that were older from different centuries? Because I love when you talk about in your epilogue, you were drawn to a puzzle jug. Could you share with us about that experience?
Yes. So the I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I had several women in my family who were my mentors. But then I also, I had some independence. I could go to the Smithsonian and spend time. So I was definitely, I could head into the Freer, which is, some of the most fantastic collections. So spending time, I knew that I wanted to be in the arts, but something that was, tangible. And that led me to the collection and to this puzzle jug, which was truly, so the puzzle jug was the piece that inspires the book. That was in the collection that I was asked to see in New York. And puzzle jugs in general, they were the life of the party in the 17th and 18th century. So they were part drinking game, mm-hmm. they were part engineering marvel, and they're part work of art. And so the idea would be after a sumptuous, 18th century dinner, 17th or 18th century dinner, you would bring out your puzzle jug. It would be filled with wine, but the trick was, because it has a pierced neck and it has spouts, you'd have to figure out how to drink from it without spilling wine all over yourself. So these were highly collectible, and, so many linen napkins were, sacrificed playing this game.
Yes.
But it was so this intricate, fragile, beautiful blue and white Delftware jug survived and made its way to New York, 300 years later. And it was made by a pottery that was owned by a woman. And so this is the book this is the piece that inspires the book.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun, and I want one.
I was going to say.
Because I looked at the piece, I'm like, wait, how? I wonder how it works. I'm like, oh.
How can I get one of these?
I want one.
Just for research sake, of course.
Exactly.
I love how you talk about the Met Wives chapter, and because I grew up in Manhattan. And I used to be able to walk to the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Guggenheim and all that. I didn't realize that it opened, 1880?
So it's just following, post-Civil War. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating because women could not be trustees of, they would not have a female trustee at the Met until the 1930s. So it's, so the book talks about, and I love the show, The Gilded Age, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. but these women were a little more complicated, than the way they're being portrayed. And so this one particular group of lionesses, so this is, Gertrude Vanderbilt, Whitney's mother, Mrs. Cornelius Vanderbilt II, together with her friends, Mrs. J. Pierpont Morgan, Mrs. J. P. Morgan, Mrs. Stanford White, mm-hmm. They couldn't vote. They couldn't join, museum boards. So they started their own. And so they started a small museum. And it was a pretty surprising location. They chose an old house in the Bronx that had a lot of Dutch history. And so this Delftware collection was the star of that small museum that these incredible women started in the late 19th century.
Amazing. And I love the pictures in the book, too.
Thank you. There were so many. It's hard to choose because, there's fantastic images. So,
could you talk a little bit about your writing process? Did you have this idea clearly laid out, or did it start to evolve?
My process was it's just pure research, and the research sources, this is everything from 17th century notarial documents. These are birth and death records, estate inventories, minutes, receipts, newspapers, but then looking at painting and architecture, just millions of sources that I would put into spreadsheets. You know, just I was creating silos of subjects or possible, you know, subjects. So then it's taking these many stories, biographies, you know, and then out of that synthesizing chapters. So it's taking details and then shaping them into narrative form.
Okay.
So basically I would create baskets for each chapter. And so when I would come across something in my research, I would put it in the basket. And then I would realize, okay, this basket is looking pretty full with some great stories. And then I could just create that chapter. That being said, I've written it so that you can, you know, whether if you're in a 17th century mood or a 19th century mood, you could totally dive into that chapter and read it for its own sake. But the flow is that it also follows the life. It begins, it's chronological, but it also follows the life of women. So the earliest sections of the book talk about girls. And then the later sections of the book talk about women in more mature role, you know, including widows, for example.
Okay.
So you're following a timeline that's both, you know, the female timeline and then also the timeline of a decorative art.
I don't know if you're like this, but when I hold something that's really old, and, you know, let's say I'm holding something from, like you have a picture of a Buddha from 1720, don't you... I don't know, my mind would start thinking back to the person that was actually holding it who made it.
Absolutely. And I describe that as well in the book, because you know, that people have held these pieces, but how, it's intriguing. And I would love to know. And I imagine, the people holding these pieces.
That would make a great movie, wouldn't it?
I think, yeah, it does. It's just so, I would love to know where these pieces, how they travel, and the people that they've been with.
Don't you think having a sense of curiosity really can positively impact our well-being?
Oh, it's everything.
It's everything.
I mean, it's so freeing, first of all, you know, to let your mind just run, you know, not constrained. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we're just so, it's all there. I mean, a better time in the history of the world. We have so much at our fingertips, but we should, you know, use it to our own advantage to create works of our own. And so whether that's creating a work of art or writing about work it's just waiting for us every day.
Yes.
And I feel like it was a privilege that I was given the opportunity to spend time, you know, to spend 5 years with objects. I mean, and I'll be forever changed, because I feel like I've met some pretty amazing women.
Yes.
I mean, I would love to have known them personally, but I feel like when you're researching someone for 5 years, you almost feel like you know them. It's so
right.
funny.
Yes. And think about how much you have learned through this experience.
Absolutely. I think I've underestimated. I think we all have. Like, I've really underestimated, I didn't truly understand the global nature of trade and art. But even in the 17th century, I kind of think we're in this, we're in a golden age, which we kind of are.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the 17th century, I mean, this was, truly, these were global markets. These are works of art that are the result of cultural exchange. It's truly fascinating. I think I've learned and I really underestimated. Yeah. So,
I love it.
Like the creativity of the past.
Now, you are a decorative art advisor and writer with over 30 years of experience in the art world, including a decade with Christie's in New York and London. Do you feel like that shaped your curiosity as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had I mean, there was, because going to museums, you know, spending time in museums or studying art history as a student is one thing. Mm-hmm. And then, but the next thing is to be able to hold all the pieces, which is what you can do when you're both an art advisor and spending time at Christie's, because I talk about this in the book, that the nature of evaluating works of art at an auction house is really you're holding the piece, you're sensing the temperature of the clay or the metal or the, you know, you're feeling the surfaces. This is a tactile kind of job. Mm-hmm. And that's where you learn.
Yes.
And you can, you know, when you can actually, you know, when you have that contact with objects.
Sure. And I love how you were part of Antiques Roadshow. Could you talk about that? You're an appraiser, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So Christie's we had a team that would go down together, and I don't know if people get the sense of this, but when you do the Antiques Roadshow, you know, you begin, you know, early in the morning, and you don't stop talking and reviewing objects for 12 hours.
Ugh.
So, and this was for 2 days. So it is it is your voice. You lose your voice.
Whoa.
By the end. But if you love conversations, you know, and you love objects, it is your dream come true, because it is a constant, it's a tap that never turns off. And so you go home at night, you know, maybe have dinner with your, you know, your auction house friends, and then it begins the next day. You're exhausted, but you can't wait for the next day.
But how are you on the 11th or 12th hour when you're looking at a fake Fabergé egg?
but it's at those moments. Well, it's like life, right? When you're down for the count,
yeah.
That, you know, something interesting could happen. But also, and I believe this strongly, and Christie's instills this in us, is that the least expected, you know, moment, the person, you know, that you never underestimate, you know, an object or a person or
sure.
You know, so you take every object seriously, and every person, you know, with, you know, so I, even though it was the end of the day, you had to, you know, that's, you know, these are people who made the effort, you know, to come mm-hmm. and see you. So you know, it's, and that's the joy of it, is looking at these pieces together with them and then talking about their objects that they or their family have had for possibly generations. So.
What an experience. So now that the book is out in the world, you're on your book tour.
Yes, it's been, yeah, it's fantastic. And, it, you know, and I've been connecting with, you know, everything, you know, museum curators, historians, archaeologists on the road, contemporary artists, interior designers.
That's great.
And then, each area is really distinct. I've been learning more about, you know, collections, you know, across the United States. And it's also a way, you know, when I'm meeting curators or, you know, doing talks for different museums or different organizations, it's a way to engage their communities again mm-hmm. with the objects in their collections. So
sure.
I think it's a way to give, this is a way to, and I really support, you know, all of these great, you know, museums, small and large, you know, to, because it's, they have so many objects. I mean, most of these, you know, museums have just a fraction of their holdings
sure.
on view.
Yeah.
And anything that I can do, you know, to invite people to come and see these collections, these great works, you know, I would do in a heartbeat. So it's
fantastic.
An honor.
Fantastic. I love it. So where can people find out more about you?
So I'm always on Instagram at G Wheeler Brown, and then the book has its own website, which is just the title. It's beyondblueandwhite.com.
Okay.
So it has more information, has you know, information regarding upcoming events.
That is great.
And then just information about Delftware.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much, Genevieve, and congratulations. Genevieve Wheeler Brown was on today's show. Beyond Blue and White is her latest book. This conversation will be up within an hour after I wrap as a podcast. And Genevieve, thank you and have a great tour.
Oh, thanks for having me. This has been so much fun. I really enjoyed it.
My pleasure. Be well. Take care.
Alrighty. Thanks. Bye.
If you missed any part or you jumped in at the middle, again, it'll be up as a podcast. Beyond Blue and White is out now. The Hidden History of Delftware and the Women Behind the Iconic Ceramic. There's a full description about the book, some great reviews, and lots more up on the show blog. It's an NPR Here and Now editor's pick. Fantastic. And the Wall Street Journal said, Beyond Blue and White taps into what every collector of antiques knows to be true. The decorative arts are more than mere objects where beauty meets function. They are the tactile messengers of histories forgotten. So we're going to take a little break, and then we will be back. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. If you're not familiar with KUCI, you can head over to our website, kuci.org, or check out our socials at KUCI FM. We'll be right back. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.